Hello everyone, I feel like it's been ages since I actually talked to you and did an intro, either because I was editing the podcast but was too lazy to do an intro, or Barry was editing it. Anyway, just a wee one to say hello, thank you for listening so much, and particularly hello to our listeners in Vietnam and Saudi Arabia, because in the past couple of weeks we peaked into the top 20, maybe even the top 10 in both of those countries. If you are a Saudi Arabian or Vietnamese listener, or, as I suspect might have happened, you're a British listener, but you were working or on holiday there, do let us know. Do get in touch. Also, we've spotted on Twitter, there's a few fans of ours, both, I think, quite long-term listeners, Courtney and Annala, who've been promoting the podcast to their followers. Thank you so much, ladies. It's so appreciated. If you are someone who likes the show, who has a social media account, or just a group of friends in your workplace canteen you think listen to you, please do tell them about it. It really helps us on the show. And the other classic way that you can help, subscribe and pop on your podcasting platform of choice and give us a review. 5 stars, the only acceptable star rating we will accept. 0 stars, the most hilariously on brand. But, you know, please don't do that. It totally fucks the algorithm. I think that's all I want to say for now, but I just wanted you to hear my sweet, sweet dulcet tones in my car before you hear them in Barry's living room. This was a great fun episode to record with Katie. I think you're going to enjoy it lots and lots. Don't know what's coming up next week, because me and Barry have not met up to record it yet, but we will be dropping our special extra content episode for May, well, before Friday, because that's when May runs out. So enjoy that. Enjoy this, and I'll speak to you soon.
Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry Max today, and each week I, my co-host, and our guest propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. And this week we are talking about the world's worst allergy, hence throughout the show you might be able to detect a slight sniff, the odd sneeze, and the occasional eye water. I'll be downing antihistamines like a sweet-toothed teenager lurking in the blind spot at a pick-and-mix stand, while my co-host is bashing his way through Kleenexes like a horny teenager lurking in the blind spot at a pick-and-mix stand.
And I'm sorry, that laugh is the sound I make when I ejaculate.
And there, dear listeners, is your free ringtone from us here at Worst Foot Forward. And allow me to introduce that very co-host. He's actually currently breaking out in hives because, rather like Winnie the Pooh, he can't resist all the delicious honey. It's Ben Vandervelde.
Hello. Isn't that right? It's breaking into hives.
Oh, yes. My bad. I may have miswritten it for comic effect.
No, I know you did, but I'm sorry to quibble with the syntax of your gags. But you break out in hives, but you Winnie the Pooh breaks into hives.
Yes, in search of a differently spelt honey as well.
H-U-N-N-Y,
yeah. Has anyone ever come up with marketing like honey as honey, spelled that way? Like tie in with Disney and Winnie the Pooh?
Why does Winnie the Pooh eat honey that is spelt the same way?
No, it's not. It's not written by the bees, Ben. He writes it on his jars.
What? That's not where I was going.
Oh,
hang on. I don't think bees store honey like by spelling out the word honey.
Okay, it sounded like that's what you were saying.
No, like bees are functionally illiterate, as you well know.
So are pantless bears.
I level with
bears in trousers, very good spellers.
Yeah, because well, they've got somewhere to keep their books and their pencils. For a moment, I thought the pantless bear was a real species.
Yes, definitely. Like the spectacled bear, the most clever of all the bears.
Yeah. Or the most short-sighted.
Yes.
It's the bear that you don't want a telling off from, because it'll put the spectacles on the end of its nose. Yeah. No, because my issue with Winnie the Pooh, apart from the fact that he's a wet blanket with a collection of friends who've got a variety of mental health disorders, is that the way he spells honey is the same as it is spelt by people on Facebook showing faux concern.
Oh, like, you okay,
you okay, hun?
So you think it's some sort of emotional crutch. I mean, it definitely is.
Oh god, that's a food addiction problem.
Stress
right
eating.
There.
I mean,
yeah.
The fact that he's climbing trees, fighting off stinging bees to steal the food that he needs.
Yeah, if your best friends are a depressed donkey, a bipolar tiger, and some wheedling little piglet, then of course you're going to risk near certain death by shoving your paw inside a hive full of bees.
We've all been to boarding school, Ben. I had some very weird friends when I was growing up as well.
I mean, that sounds like displacement activity.
Wheedling piglet was definitely my my nickname.
That production of Lord of the Flies was very upsetting. We should introduce our guest, otherwise I will continue to deconstruct much-loved children's classics. Our guest this week is a one-woman force of comedic nature. She is an actress, a comedian, and by hell is she a musician. We're going to just quickly pop to her website whilst I list all of the instruments she can play.
Wow, really?
It's all of them. She can play the flute, the saxophone, all four flavours, the ukulele, guitar, rhythm, but apparently not blues, the cajon, the recorder, the piano, and the drums. And I get the impression that if we just dropped her in a music showroom and just pointed her at an instrument, she'd be able to suss it out pretty goddamn quickly.
Turn into a one-woman production of Once, straight away.
She has worked all over this mighty industry in the West End, and number one UK tours, and she hosts her own podcast called The Farce and the Spurious. What a name. The only show to be set in her very own imaginary living room. She has performed for the legendary News Review and, most importantly, as part of a rock and roll band for kids with me called The Small Laces. Thanks, my brain just fell to bits there. She is a multiple comedy award winner and the finest woman on the circuit to dress up as Henry VIII. It is the marvellous Katie Pritchard.
Tightly fought event. But the trick is, the problem is, if you do a lineup where there's one woman already dressed as Henry VIII, they can't possibly ever have two on at the same time.
No.
So yeah, it's a wee crowded
really
market.
Excuse, yeah.
Yeah, but one day I'm going to get a bill where I have all eight of the female Henry impersonators.
In your imaginary, you host your podcast, but it's set in an imaginary living room.
Yeah, so I now can report that I do actually live somewhere that has a living room.
Oh, nice, okay.
Yeah, but I used to live in a living roomless house.
Oh, one of those where the living room was also a bedroom.
Yeah, exactly. So, by way of trying to escape the boredom of having no space, I invented my own imaginary living room, and it was very busy.
What's in your imaginary living room?
There's sofas.
Okay.
Nice,
far out, man.
Where do you get your crazy ideas from?
So zany. It was a TV.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Transvestite.
Just chilling out in the corner.
So now you've moved to a place that has a sitting room.
Yeah.
Is your podcast going to move sitting room as well, or will you remain recording in the imaginary sitting room?
No, still very much in the imaginary sitting room, yeah. My current sitting room, it doesn't have a sofa. It does have a sofa, but it doesn't have all the things that my imaginary living room had. Mm-hmm. So I think I'll stay in the imaginary room.
Yeah, so now do you record in the living room? Physically in the living room?
No.
Okay, because that'd be an Inception level of living room.
Yeah. Oh, now you've said that. Maybe
a living room within a living room?
Yeah.
It hasn't been done in art before.
Oh my goodness. I've got so many ideas now.
What about two sofas? Three?
No.
Anything's possible.
Oh, come on. I know you are living the dream here.
Yeah, we are recording in my living room at the moment, which does have a sofa, I'm happy to report, but one very small TV. Katie, we always ask our guests what they're worst at in the world. You are multi-talented in the ways of performance. Mm. Is there anything that you are particularly bad at?
There's a few things, yeah. Musically, I am the worst at the violin.
Good.
Yeah, which
fucking good, Katie, because you're too good at everything else.
I discovered that when I was seven.
Why are you so bad at it? What do you do to it?
I think it's probably a lot to do with having tiny hands.
If you can't do the different
finger
placements.
It's hard, yeah. But obviously there's different size violins, but at seven I knew at that point, I was already on the recorder and the flute, you see, so I knew that the violin wasn't going to plan.
And also, I mean, for listeners, obviously, you can't see Katie. Katie is not the tallest of people. I imagine a regular side violin with you would look like you're trying to play a double bass on your shoulder.
Cello.
Cello. I don't think my fingers are right. I don't think it's just the fingers, frankly.
I am in awe of anyone that can play viola. Mm. I'm like, even that's too big for me.
Yeah. And the viola's the little one. Was that the big one?
No, it's bigger than violin, smaller than cello. Andrew Lloyd Webber's brother Julian Lloyd Webber, who's an expert, like a very proficient cello player, very, very good cellist. Mm-hmm. And watching him play cello is amazing. Just the whole body is in it, but the fingering and how it works up and down, and just being able to get those really accurate, beautiful placements in one go. And it is a work of art. It is watching an artist at work, seeing people, particularly stringed instruments and pianos as well. I always think they're so impressive watching people when they're in full flight.
The thing with the piano, I sort of went back to the piano, having played the guitar for ages. What I love with the piano is that it's there in front of you, and if you hit a note, it's not going to sound wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. like that black note there does what it says. Yeah. That's going to be an F sharp no matter what I do to it.
But unless it's a G flat.
Could you just do that in G flat as well? Yeah. As ever, I looked into the background of the concept of allergies, and it's a very modern notion. It was only introduced in 1906 by a paediatrician called Clemens von Perke.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to call him Clem Perky. And I don't understand the science behind it, but he basically noticed that patients who had received injections of horse serum or smallpox vaccine... Now, I understand why you'd inject someone with smallpox vaccine. Why you're injecting them with horse serum? I don't know.
I mean, it was Victorians and Warians in it. It seems that, it's just the excuse for anyone at that time.
But basically, they had a severe reaction to the second injections, for reasons of science.
Yeah, so the first one, they sort of recognised it as an unwanted thing in the body, so the second time round it would react more violently.
Right.
Which is what allergies are actually your immune system overreacting.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. So why... Do you have any allergies?
I do, yeah. I've got hay fever, so, allergic rhinitis.
So mainstream, mate.
Yes.
That is the Coldplay of allergies.
My husband's allergic to the sunlight.
Yeah, I know. We only learned that recently.
Yeah, that was last summer. He discovered it the hard way.
Yeah.
He was working on a film, and he was in a green screen suit, so he's basically wearing a morph suit with just his hands and his face uncovered outside. Quite a sunny day, and it's nothing to do with how much sun cream you're wearing, because the way sun cream has a star rating and a number rating. Mm-hmm. And he had a high number rating, but the star rating wasn't sufficient to protect him from UVA, I think, is what causes the allergies.
No, the star rating is what the Guardian thinks of its Edinburgh show.
And so he came home, he couldn't sleep because his face was buzzing and his hands were buzzing. The rest of him was fine, it just was like he was on fire for a couple of days, basically. And he went to the doctor, and as soon as he walked in, the doctor was like, yeah, you've got the same thing I do, you're allergic to the sun, mate.
Oh, no! Yeah.
He's so lucky that the doctor had the same thing.
So it's just, you can take lots of over-the-counter antihistamines. You can take three or four of them and they're fine. And he has some extra special strong ones if it's particularly bad.
Mm.
Lots of highly starred sun cream. And basically you just sort of... like, you wean yourself onto the sun every year.
Yeah.
It's really annoying. Your body forgets that it's done that each year as well. So every summer he has to sort of expose himself bit by bit to the sun. And then by next year, his body will have forgotten again. So he has to do it all over again.
The top of his index finger.
Yeah, yeah. Wearing long sleeves. And then eventually he can roll the sleeves up.
Ooh. So, hang on. So your husband is essentially doing a burlesque for the sun.
Yes, but over a really extended period of time.
Yeah, so burlesque is written by Wagner.
Yeah.
Is your husband a vampire?
Oh my god!
Some of his family are from Romania.
They are.
Oh my goodness!
Did you read about the guy who was the precursor to Perke, Charles Richet?
No.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you read? He's one of our typical Victorian scientists. Ben,
go for it.
He was looking into anaphylaxis was the thing he was looking into, and those sudden allergic reactions, really violent ones, where the circulatory system collapses. And the way he did that as he killed a whole lot of dogs. That's a running theme for this podcast.
If you want to find out some information, kill a whole lot of dogs.
Yeah, he was basically, he was doing that thing where he was injecting them with toxins of marine animals for some reason to see what it would do to them. And then when he wanted to sort of conduct the experiments again, he saved costs by injecting the same dogs, any of the dogs that had survived the first time, and they... The article I read about it said it caused sudden and impressive deaths. Which is not a phrase you want to read.
What counts as an impressive death for a dog?
I don't know. He sort of did a 360 turn in pike position before it fell to the ground.
Oh, I thought it kind of like it went through like a tunnel and then over a seesaw and through a hoop and then died.
Wrote a 5,000 word essay. Yeah. And he thought it was the species protecting itself from corruption. So it was like, because they were really into... obviously the Darwin at that point, so think, okay, the species is killing itself to stop any corruption spreading among itself, which obviously isn't necessarily the case. But he later won the Nobel Prize for Medicine, this is Richet, in 1913, for his study into allergies and anaphylaxis. He also coined the phrase ectoplasm and was a big fan of the paranormal and eugenics.
That is one hell of a CV.
It's a really proper Victorian into the 20th century scientist dude, isn't he?
I also read, like, I think it was him or his contemporaries, that when they were trying to figure out what allergies were, because no one until that point had put a name to it.
Yeah.
So, like, in the medieval times, they had, like, some kind of really romantic... they were like, the time of year when the roses bloom and you can't breathe very well. That's what they were calling it. And to try and figure out what it was, they were like overexposing themselves.
Yes.
So they'd like go and like rub their face in pollen. And then they'd come back and be like, see? What is this?
I proved something. I don't know what.
Oh, that sounds a lot like my GCSE homework in science.
Clem Perkey was really interesting though, because various scientists, including Pasteur, had talked about the immune system, and they thought the immune system is just something that fights bad stuff. And actually what von Perkey proved is that it just has a range of reaction. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that reaction is sufficient to beat off a disease, but sometimes it overreacts and actually causes harm to you as well.
Yeah.
So beforehand, everyone was like, the immune system's brilliant. And von Perkey was like, no, it's got its bad points as well. It's like sexuality, it's a sliding scale. It's not something he would have said because he was 30 years before Kinsey.
Yeah. That would have been amazing.
I'm just preempting the nerds. Yeah, yeah. The emails.
In America, between 20 and 40,000 people are allergic to semen.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. That's really upsetting.
Yeah. And all of them are homophobic jocks. The allergy, they basically can't have it fired in their eyes.
Because for the rest of us, that's completely normal.
Yeah.
If they had that combined with a latex allergy as well, though.
Oh, God.
Because then, like, it makes it even harder.
Yeah. Sorry. So sorry. I thought I was better than that, and I'm not.
No, you're not.
But no, the weird thing is, obviously, most of the time, semen allergies seem to affect women, and they take the form of these small parasitic creatures that live inside them for 9 months and then leave. a woman's downstairs areas can become downstairs areas.
You can say vagina, it's fine, yeah.
A woman's vagina.
But that is the tone of voice I have to say it in. No one goes, vagina!
It's like,
vagina!
In G-flat again.
Vagina in G-flat.
Vagina. This is next year's podcast award entry. All of us sitting around saying vagina. Vagina, 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 vagina!
Vagina.
No, I correct myself. That's your ringtone, guys.
I'm 34 in 5 days. What's wrong with me?
If the guilty feminists need a new intro music. anyway,
with semen allergies, obviously, it generally affects women's vagina.
Vaginas!
But occasionally, it can affect men, which I find very funny.
Oh, on the way out, it's just burning.
Yeah.
Oh,
so their own semen, can they be allergic to their own...
I don't know if they're allergic to anyone else's semen.
Yeah, that's really hard.
Gosh.
Come on, Ben. I can say the word hard without you smiling.
You really can't.
It's usually so. A lot of allergies are caused by proteins and stuff. There's obviously a lot of protein in semen. So I'm told. That's why I'm looking particularly buff today. So that would make a lot of sense that it'd be
it
a
would.
Source of it.
Connected to this, as well as being allergic to semen, you can be allergic to wood.
Yeah. particular types of wood or all wood?
So many different types. I found an enormous list
of
all the different things woods you can be allergic to and what it can do to you. I'm going to give you the edited highlights of four of my favourites. You can be allergic to albizia, which will cause irritation, nausea, pink eye, giddiness, which sounds lovely. Just kind of like you become allergic to that and you go, I'll put £25 on the 33-1 horse.
I'm going
to
stay up past my bedtime.
Yeah. And nosebleeds. I just like the idea of buying some new furniture made of that and going, what beautiful furniture, and then your nose starts...
You don't want to be giddy while nosebleeding.
They may be connected, those two things.
Yeah.
There's aphromosia, which affects your nervous system, asthma, and if you get splinters, they go septic.
Oh.
Which is really nasty. Greenheart.
I'm not going to lie, Ben, I haven't heard of any of these woods so far.
They're very... aphromosia is called the blood tree, because when you cut it...
Your nose starts bleeding.
Yeah, it's very difficult to find lumberjacks and have all that figure where it grows. The sap looks like blood.
Oh, wow.
There's creepy. Another territory called a greenheart where you can allergic to it and you can have wheezing, a bit of a sore throat, or indeed cardiac and intestinal disorders.
Wow, it's always a sliding scale with this.
But my favourite one is Angelim Vermelho. Who was a character from Game of Thrones who didn't make it to the final episode.
Solid centre-back for Roma, I think, in the 80s, wasn't he?
And if you find yourself allergic to that, you will receive, according to this table, unspecific allergic reactions. I always like when I'm allergic to something, for someone to just go, I'm going to spin the roulette wheel of life and see what you come out with.
Wow.
I'm torn between which two I'm going to pick. Now, I'll tell you about electrosensitivity.
Oh, yeah.
These are people who are hypersensitive to electricity. They complain about a whole host of symptoms. And this is before the spread of Wi-Fi and mobile phone masks that made things an awful lot worse. Things that you can have nausea, fatigue, headache, sleeplessness, a ringing in the ears, ironically, depression, difficulty remembering things, skin rashes, all sorts of horrible stuff.
Because electricity and pulses and all stuff can be very... Because they talk about pulse bombs and things affecting people if at a high level. So it makes sense. Yeah, again, it's logical that there would be people who'd have it at a low level as well.
Do you know what country it is most prevalent in?
Electricity.
No, not electricity. allergy too.
Yeah. Is it a big... It must be a big developed one where it's been around for a while, is it? Is it China?
India.
Nope. Sweden.
Oh.
Apparently 5% of the Swedish population believe that they are allergic to electricity.
Well, that's because they've got great Wi-Fi and 4G coverage in Sweden, so...
Yeah, I know. It swings and roundabouts, isn't it?
Yeah. Did you hear about the guy called Michael Neild?
No.
He's a violinist who was allergic to cell phone radiation. He was an Oxford grad, and he was so sensitive to it. He took really extreme measures to avoid it. He relocated 100 miles away from anywhere else, from anywhere built up. He wore these microfiber suits and slept in microfiber tents, and just couldn't get any peace. He ended up committing suicide as a result of it. So it was such an extreme thing.
There was a woman that used to sleep in a silver suit. And disrupt the
like a space suit.
Yeah, like an astronaut.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've forgotten her name. Sorry about that.
Sorry if you're listening.
Oh no, Debbie Bird. Here you go, Debbie Bird. Yeah.
Oh wow.
She coated her walls with carbon paint. Sleeps under a silver net.
Wow, and wears a colander.
And is safe from werewolf attack as well.
Yeah. But for my choice of the world's worst allergy, I'm going to pick a poor chap called Tom McGregor. And I'm obviously, as the parent of a young child, I'm very wary of food allergies. It was great, got quite a lot of fun actually testing him, just giving him shit and seeing what would happen.
Yeah.
And Tom McGregor is a gentleman who is allergic to blackberries. And Tom McGregor was, he basically had a problem with invasive wildlife on his farmland, in particular, several rabbits, one rabbit in particular. He sort of had a pitched battle against these rabbits. Really was a turf war. It was quite heavily documented at the time. And it came to it that the rabbit actually picked up some blackberries and threw them at Tom McGregor. And Tom McGregor swallowed one of the blackberries.
Suddenly spotting a familiar.
And suffered anaphylactic shock.
Yeah, they put it in the Peter Rabbit movie, didn't they?
Yes, they put Farmer McGregor, played by Donald Gleeson, and Peter Rabbit, played by known shite hawk James Corden. And so as the climax of Peter Rabbit taking down his nemesis, he throws blackberries down his mouth, and the farmer has an attack, has to stab himself with his EpiPen.
Wow!
Which, like, in a kids' movie.
This is...
Peter Rabbit is a murderer.
What? Attempted, but still, murderer. You know.
Yeah, well,
I think that's definitely what Beatrix Potter was aiming for when she wrote the story originally.
Yeah, Peter Rabbit 2 is just the fallout, and he goes on trial. It's like
Rabbit versus McGregor. It's going to be like a court battle.
Because I haven't watched many Rabbit movies since... Uh-huh. You know, the
Watership Down.
But that sounds more dramatic somehow.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, Watership Down is pretty bleak, but they never resort to chemical warfare.
No, they're
it's
just
a bit watered down by comparison. Sorry, Ben's just stabbing himself with an EpiPen. He's allergic to puns.
Brilliantly, the morning after the film's release in America, the Kids with Food Allergies Foundation, which is somewhere that is just begging to have things sent to it into the post, just envelopes full of spices until one of them goes down, that is part of the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America. And I think it's very cruel that foundation has so many aspirations in its name. They published an open letter to Sony criticising the film's portrayal of food allergies. They started a boycott Peter Rabbit hashtag on Twitter.
Wow, that's when it gets really serious.
It reached as high an organ as the New York Times, and Sony had to send out a statement saying food allergies are a serious issue. Our film should not make light of Peter Rabbit's arch nemesis, Mr. McGregor, being allergic to blackberries, even in a cartoonish slapstick way. We sincerely regret not being more aware and sensitive to this issue, and we truly apologise.
You gotta wonder how it got through lots of test screenings and various writings of the script and all of that to get there.
Guys, can we stop being such absolute snowflakes? Like, a man being allergic to blackberries and having a blackberry fired into his mouth by a rabbit is the plot of almost every Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd cartoon. It's not like Peter Rabbit dropped a grand piano on his head or painted a
train tunnel on a wall for him to run into.
Yeah, I know. But obviously that is very offensive to people who don't have good perspective. So I think this is the world's worst allergy, because I think it is it's almost not the blackberry allergy of a fictional character that I have a problem with. I almost think it's all the people who are oversensitive to the portrayal of allergies in a humorous manner.
So they're allergic to portrayals of allergies.
Yes, exactly. because I think you can portray almost anything in a hilarious manner, particularly health problems.
Ben Van Velde, who died today.
Hilariously.
I found this really bad allergy that I think it would really not be good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, it's not one that I have, but I'll talk you through the ones that I do have in a minute. But it's an allergy to vibration.
Wow.
Yeah, so can you imagine, like, you couldn't go on the tube, couldn't be a DJ.
Couldn't, the back of a bus.
Yeah, couldn't play guitar.
Yeah, you couldn't let the bass drop.
Couldn't go to Ann Summers.
on a merry-go-round.
You couldn't do anything.
Couldn't have vigorous sex with someone who's also allergic to semen.
You couldn't stand next to Pavarotti while he's singing. So many. So yeah, that's quite a bad one.
You couldn't be very frightened in a cartoonish way.
Could be a Ghostbuster. The list is endless.
That's really weird.
What could you do?
So is it again, is it, they come out all the various non-specific allergy reactions?
Yes, all the different ways you can react when one has an allergy.
Rashes and all that.
Apparently, according to my research, the allergies are, in the most part, like a skin rash.
Okay.
And then they kind of disappear after a few hours or maybe a day.
Wow.
But, that's, can you imagine being like, yeah, I'll go on this night, and how do you discover that you're allergic to vibration? I don't know.
Silent disco.
Yeah. Even then, is your ear going to be allergic? Yeah. You're going to have allergy in your ear?
You got to have the volume down really low.
Yeah.
It's just, wow, that's a
can you just
smoke.
Whisper in my ear? Even then?
Yeah.
No tickling. Oh, so many things you can't do.
How would you live without vibration?
This is
the question. How about your heart vibrating in your chest?
That's pulsating rather than vibrating.
Okay.
Well, that's a good point, actually. When does vibration become another form of quick movement?
Great question. I didn't write it down.
Didn't follow the Wikipedia thread for two vibration and then pulsation.
Maybe, yeah.
Let's ask the Beach Boys.
They would know.
They'd know.
Yeah. Now I'm going to talk about myself.
Yeah, what allergies do you have?
So, I think I might win this.
Okay.
And I don't mean to show off about it, but I'm allergic to antihistamines.
That's insane!
So, and I have other allergies as well, but I just have to ride out my allergic reaction. Like, for example, I'm allergic to this lovely blanket that you've put on the table.
Really?
Yeah, I'm allergic to wool.
Oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't realise. I can remove it for you.
Yeah, no, it's right. It looks lovely.
I would like you to remove it like a magician, removing a table from the table, leaving all the podcast equipment safely spinning on the tabletop.
That's why you're very carefully not putting elbows on table like a bad house guest. That's which is what I'm doing. That's amazing.
Or I've got my paper here, just in case.
Are you allergic to paper?
No. but I'm also allergic to some natural antihistamines as well. So not only can I not take the actual drugs, but I can't take turmeric. I'm allergic to turmeric, which is a natural, which is very good for you.
Yeah, it's very good. You get a lot of curries then as well, so you cannot eat many curries.
I can't eat curries, really.
Wow.
I can if I make them myself, but
yeah.
You see? It's a tough life, right?
Yeah, but listen, wool and turmeric and antihistamines.
Yeah, you must have the shittest winters. Cuddle up in your Edinburgh woolen mill jumper, enjoying a nice turmeric latte.
No, I do, you know. You find enjoyment in other things in life.
Yeah, you do.
Like
you love a man-made fabric, does Katie?
I love an acrylic. Yeah. I love an acrylic or a fleece. Even they're beautiful, they are. But yeah, I discovered this allergy to antihistamines because my alleged reaction to antihistamines is that it extenuates the symptoms that I am taking the antihistamines for.
Oh, wow.
So the first time I took antihistamines, I was having a heat rash.
Yeah.
And I took them, and then my arm, within not very long, just started bleeding, like sheets of blood.
Through the pores?
Sheets of blood.
Like in Let the Right One In.
Yeah. I mean, it was like in a horror movie.
Wow. So hang on, Let the Right One In and Carrie were just about very serious allergic reactions.
That's it. And then
imagine if Carrie was allergic to electricity.
She was just not, no one understood her.
Deep
down, she's just frustrated. And then I took one antihistamine again because I didn't realise it's antihistamine because I had labyrinthitis, which is like inner ear.
Oh, inner ear stuff, yeah.
And the antibiotics they gave me were an antihistamine. And I got, I couldn't touch anything.
Yeah.
I was like hypersensitive. I was like hallucinating. So I thought there was like a demon in the corner of the room.
Oh, wow.
And I was like wailing like uncontrollably. Like that's the only...
Were you on acid? They didn't give you acid.
That's what it felt like. I literally was like, I am on a trip. Like,
What did the demon look like?
It was just a really dark cloaked figure.
In a woolen cloak, perhaps?
Stay back, stay back.
Instead of brimstone coming off him, just turmeric. Yeah.
I know your game. I don't want any hives today.
So it just makes you the extreme version of whatever the symptom
extreme
is.
Extreme version, yeah.
That's amazing.
So, and then obviously with like wool, and I'm allergic to perfume as well.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
all like skin reactions.
So again, you'd get the bleeding.
Wow, so you spend your life cold and smelling awful.
Or just not smelling of perfume.
Yeah, it smells perfectly fragrant for that.
No, I mean, you do. I was just going for... I was just going for a sly playground dig.
Do you have hay fever?
No, and
what
I...
What a blessed relief that is.
Well... I was worried because my eye's watering today.
Oh, yeah.
And I was worried, gosh, what if I do get hay fever?
Yeah, because then you won't be able to do
the only natural antihistamine I can have is raw red onion.
Oh, is that
so for any allergy fans out there who are also allergic to antihistamines, raw red onions, apparently.
Does that make you cry, though? Still.
Maybe it just washes it all
just
out.
Just washes it out, yeah. Can you do the local honey? That's the solution. That's what they say. If you have hay fever, have honey from local hives.
Yeah.
You can have honey. Okay.
From local hives.
So from wherever you live, if there's honey from... If there's a hive near you, you should get it from there because it'll be made with the pollen that's around your area.
Which is the Royston Vasey approach.
Yes.
To, local honey for local people.
Local allergies.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if there's many beehives in Oval, but...
No. They do have rooftop hives in London, in top of like office blocks and apartment buildings and stuff. Now
I have to look it up.
Yeah, and some city farms have them too.
Why rooftop hives?
Because that's where the snow gardens are.
I don't know where you live, Ben. Your high flying lifestyle.
Yeah. There's no gardens for a lot of apartment buildings, so they have it on the roof.
Do you have a garden?
Okay, I mean yes, but it's
they
mostly
have a little
concrete.
One. Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, oh no, I mean I guess. It was because you couldn't, if you had like a block of flats, you couldn't put the hives on like the fifth floor. Just like,
with no lifts.
Yeah.
Okay, we live on the seventh floor. Floor one, there's herds of antelope. Floor two, it's a hall of mirrors. Three, it's just snakes and ladders. Four, actually just flats. Five, that's where the bees live. Six, it's the McGregors live in number six. Don't feed them blackberries. And then you find us number seven.
Antelope on the first floor. You can have a vibration ID and that.
Yeah.
Please, an antelope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Katie, you're breaking our lives. What's happening? They're herding. They're herding.
Imagine being a bee who's allergic to vibrations.
Oh, now that.
You couldn't ever have sex because they do the little sort of vibration dance to attract people, don't they, as well?
Oh, imagine if they're allergic to bee semen as well.
That's what honey is, right?
No.
Oh, I don't know.
No, it's not.
Honey is bee sick, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Ah, the other end.
Yeah. I wonder what bee semen tastes like.
To the lab. No, wait, so floor five. I read a bit about old
McDonald's.
I read a bit about historical figures who had allergies.
Ooh.
Right.
Have you heard of Menes, Pharaoh Menes? He was considered the unifier of Upper and Lower Egypt. He was the head of the first dynasty of Egyptian pharaohs from sometime between 3200 to 3000 BC. Although, if you read some Victorian historians on it, they place him any time between 5702 BC to 2320 BC. So it's quite a wide range that they've gone for there. He is known by various names. The thing about Menes is actually there's very little mention of him in historical documents, whereas there's lots of mention of another guy called Narmer, who's also known by another name, Hor-Aha. So they're all great. Hor-Aha. Alan Partridge visiting a brothel. And... Egyptologists today kind of figure that they're all the same person, that they're all this one person, which is ironic because when you're writing the hieroglyphic name for Narmer, it includes the hieroglyph for catfish, which is obviously when you're trying to go by a different identity online, it's called catfishing. So for somebody who goes by three different names, it's appropriate. Anyway, Menes Diodorus Siculus tells a couple of stories about him when he was pharaoh, one of which is a great one. He was turned on by his own dogs while hunting, and in fleeing from them, fled across a lake on the back of a crocodile to the far side, whereupon he founded the city of Crocodilopolis.
No.
Yes, he
way.
Did. It's a genuine real place. There was a city called Crocodilopolis where they worshipped crocodiles, and they had crocodiles in the street and in the temples.
Crocodile.
And Mayonnaise founded this.
Mayonnaise founded this place, having been saved from his own hunting pack by a crocodile, apparently.
Well, and obviously that is where Lacoste has its headquarters.
Yeah. Mayonnaise is thought to have he's maybe the first figure in history to have died from an anaphylactic shock. They sort of recorded anyway, because it's generally thought that he died from a wasp sting. But another story says he was carried off by a hippo at the end of the life. So maybe he was allergic to hippos rather than wasps. We just can't be certain.
Had a very close relationship with the major animals of the Nile.
Yes.
I mean, that's a stunning thing. If you enjoy hanging out with crocodiles, you know, if you're a friend of the crocodile and you die thanks to a wasp sting.
Mm.
Yes. I also read about Britannicus, who was the son of the Emperor Claudius. He was sort of sidelined by Nero. Nero was Claudius' adopted son and was considered much healthier than Britannicus. So he ended up being appointed consul when he was 13 and being given the toga before he was 14, when you're meant to become a man. And being,
set up a cafe.
His dad bought him shares and stuff. one of the reasons they think that happened is that Britannicus was allergic to horses, which meant that he wasn't able to ride at the head of processions in the way that the sort of the young patricians and nobles in the family would be expected to do, whereas Nero was then deputized to do that, and people sort of started seeing him as the heir to Claudius. And people actually thought Britannicus was dead or wasn't even in the line of succession anymore.
Britannicus.
I know, it was really quite sad. Apparently his allergy was so violent his eyes would swell up in such a way that he couldn't actually see where he was going while riding the horse. So it was like he's got natural blinkers of his own. Later on, when Nero was emperor, they were having a party. They were still quite young. I mean, Nero was only, a teenager, I think, when he became emperor. Britannicus died when he was 15, murdered by Nero. So when Nero was emperor, he urged Britannicus to sing a song at the festival of Saturnalia, a big drunken festival, expecting Britannicus to be terrible, for it to be embarrassing. Instead, Britannicus sang a beautiful poem about how he had been cast aside by Nero and how sad his life had been, and got great sympathy and acclaim from all around him. Which what seemed to be the point at which Nero started to think, maybe I should kill this guy. He poisoned Britannicus later on at a party. Britannicus did get his food tasted by a taster, but then asked for the food to be cooled down, and they used jugs of water to pour it on the food to cool it, and the poison was in the water. Nero's clever that way.
Oh.
Yeah. And
Nero!
And Richard III, he was allergic to strawberries. Yeah.
Oh, if only Henry VII had known that.
Well,
saved a lot of trouble.
Funnily enough, they may have led to the whole effort to overthrow Richard III. He went to a meeting with a guy called William, Lord Hastings, who was the Chancellor, he was the Master of the Mint, and a very loyal supporter of Edward IV, whose son, Edward V, was meant to be king, who Richard was usurping, that he was one of the princes in the Tower. And in summer, Richard went to meet him. This is in 1483, I think. Richard went to meet him, according to a report by Thomas More, and he asked for some strawberries from a nearby garden, and they were brought to him, and he returned an hour and a half later, fretting, frowning, chewing his lips, and holding a withered arm on one side, a bit like you when you were bleeding out of your things. This is all dramatised in Shakespeare's Richard III, by the way. And he ordered Hastings be executed for witchcraft. So apparently all of these symptoms, these are all, you know, allergic symptoms, and it's particularly sort of symptomatic that you would have a reaction in one arm, and it can sort of swell up or become immobile. And so he executed Hastings, and that was witnessed by both the Earl of Buckingham and Earl Stanley. Buckingham led the rebellion against Richard later in 1483, and Stanley was the dude who showed up at the Battle of Bosworth, Richard thinking he was going to relieve his army, and instead turned his army away again. Yeah, Stanley.
Yeah. Well, Stan Lee does like doing cameos.
Yes. Yeah. So possibly Richard's allergy led to the whole situation that caused people to turn against him. Thomas More actually suggests that Richard used his symptoms as an excuse to try and to get Hastings executed. So he knew full well he was allergic to strawberries when he asked for them in the first place. I also read about... Have you heard of an allergic shiner? I've never seen these.
No.
I vaguely read about it. Is allergic shiner as in a black eye you get.
Yeah, you can get a black eye from particularly allergic rhinitis. If your sinuses are particularly bad, then it looks like you've been smacked in the eye. It's really convincing bruise.
I mean, I sort of get that. When I get allergic to cats and dogs, full disclosure. When I was a teenager and I used to go to my brother's house to get high and would come home with high face. And my mum would be like, "Oh, Ben, what's happened to you?" Like, "Oh, I'm allergic to my brother's cat, so it must be that." But actually, the mixture of smoking lots of marijuana and being near a cat that you're allergic to will make me look like one of the vampires from Buffy.
Puffy.
Puffy, yeah.
I read about people who died from asthma as well, and various cures from asthma. Asthma is obviously very widespread. American President Martin Van Buren, Neil Francis Hawkins, who was a British fascist.
Good.
And another Neil Hamilton, not the Tory politician who took bribes, but Neil Hamilton, the actor who played Commissioner Gordon in the Adam West Batman TV series.
Wow, yeah. Good names are death.
Yeah, right. If they'd been alive in ancient Egypt, they might have treated it with frankincense, yellow ochre, or grapes. The Ebers Papyrus says that thou shalt fetch 7 stones and heat them by fire. Thou shalt take one thereof and place a little of these remedies on it and cover it with a new vessel whose bottom is perforated and place a stalk of reed in this hole. Thou shalt put thy mouth to this stalk so that thou inhalest the smoke of it. Likewise with all stones. So you just keep sniffing up the fumes of burning grapes and frankincense and yellow ochre to try and clear your asthma if you're in Egypt.
Wow.
And suffocate.
Has anyone tried it in modern times to see if it works?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't read that. I know that certainly the Chinese recommended using ephedra, which is a herb they've been using in Chinese medicine for 2,000 years, and that's still used in various remedies. In fact, anything that contains ephedrine, which is a byproduct of that, is banned in the USA. It's the thing that Maradona was tested positive for at the 94 World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
What's a medieval one?
If you had asthma in medieval times, they'd make you swallow young frogs. Again, just
how young? Because if they're very young, that's basically
spunk.
And if you're allergic to semen, then you're doomed.
How do you date a frog? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If they're not a tadpole anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's good. But swallow them whole or leave them on your tongue and dissolve them?
swallow a frog, a young frog.
And then you'd have a frog in your throat.
Oh my goodness.
That's a good thing. As opposed to
again,
the allergy.
All these cures seem to be like
worse.
Closing up the airway.
Yeah.
Shove something in there.
Can't breathe. Gag yourself with this frog.
Smoke yourself to death.
Our old friend Pliny the Elder.
Yay! Glad he's back.
He, in fairness to him, did acknowledge pollen was a source of respiratory disease, so bang on the money. And he also recommended using ephedra, the herb the Chinese were using. So that was quite close. He said if you'd sort of put ephedra in red wine and drink that down, that was pretty good. He also then went a bit rogue, as Pliny was wont to do, and suggested drinking the blood of wild horses, fox liver in red wine, or millipede soaked in honey.
I sort of feel like, you know, there's those memes that go on Facebook of get your indie band name, get your Tory politician name, and it's always a way of hacking into your bank security.
Yeah.
But I think you could also have a sort of get your Pliny the Elder cure.
Yes! Well, like, pick this animal, this body part dipped in this fluid.
Yeah. So a lemur's tongue dipped in brine.
There you go. You see, and that's a cure for warts. Yeah,
yeah.
Well-known cure for warts, that.
Yeah.
You heard it here in Worstwood Forward first, folks. I also read quickly about sneezing. You know the reason we say God bless you when people sneeze?
It's because people thought that your soul was escaping via your nose.
And particularly, the Jews thought it was that.
Yeah. Silly Jews.
Yeah, Talmudic scholars saw sneezing was a positive function. But sort of ancient Jewish thought was that, yeah, it was when you sneezed, it was time to die.
Oh, gosh.
That's an early edit of a James Bond script.
Yes, when Bond sneezes, achoo, time to die, Mr. Bond. and then, yes, I'm going to give you my choice from, again, some really horrible things to be allergic to. A woman died in London in 2012 because she was allergic to the glue in her hair extensions.
Oh dear.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently that happens relatively frequently. Because if you're putting your hair extensions, gluing them in, and then going out clubbing, you're sweating, it's opening the pores up, and so the glue can get into your pores. I think it probably because there's latex in them again. I also read about the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists have recorded something called pemphigoid gestationis, which is a skin condition. Blisters can appear on the abdomen and over large regions of the body, which women get during the second or third trimester and after giving birth. They're basically allergic to their own children.
Whoa.
Their own newborn children or unborn children. One woman called Joanne Mackey, who was 28, developed agonising blisters and an excruciating rash shortly after giving birth to her son James, with welts on her back, her legs, her arms, her chest, with so much pain that she couldn't even hold her newborn. Went after a few months, but she was left with scars from where the blisters were.
Oh gosh, that must be a hard one.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. You know, giving birth, bad enough.
Yeah.
This one, I shouldn't laugh at, but it's kind of hard not to. In 2008, a 43-year-old woman called Carol Hickey died in Ireland of an allergic reaction. She was a mother of four. She died after 57-year-old Sean McDonnell met her on an internet chat room which was devoted to bestiality, and they arranged for her to come and have sex with his Alsatian dog. She was allergic to the Alsatian.
Oh, I've heard about this before. Sorry, she wasn't allergic to the Alsatian's sex juice.
It was some sort of anaphylaxis. It was related to peanuts. So it may have been fur, it may have been... entirely sure exactly what it was, but it was definitely an anaphylactic shock in the aftermath of her having had sex with this dog.
I was going to say, imagine... like several things. Firstly, imagine watching that going and thinking, I'm pretty good at sex. Oh my god, my Alsatian has fucked a woman to death.
Yes.
And then how do you defend that in court?
Well, he was arrested and charged under the 1861 Offences Against the Person Act. He's the first person in Ireland to ever be charged under what was a 150-year-old law at that point. He was given a 3-year suspended sentence eventually. But yeah, that's what a way to go.
You can imagine her turning up the gates of St. Peter and like saying, how did you get here? What?
So he was charged because she died, not because he let her have sex with his dog.
I can't remember. I don't know exactly what the argument against it was, but he had certainly facilitated the cause of her death.
Of course.
Yes. And I think the bestiality wasn't looked kindly upon either.
That poor dog did that. Dog get rehomed?
The dog was quarantined. I don't know what happened to it in the aftermath of it, but I know it was quarantined after she had died.
Why is no one talking about this dog?
I know. He's got a tell-all story.
Yeah.
He's probably sold it to the Sun.
Pick me up.
Unless it was one of those, you know, like the National Enquirer catch-and-kill story where they bought the rights and then, you know, put it where he doesn't want it coming out.
Yeah.
Well, it might be that the dog sort of has rehabilitated his public persona now and now works for the Paw Patrol.
Yeah, that's possibly true. In his past life. But I'm going to choose as my world's worst allergy, the allergy that afflicts Grace Morley, a 14 at the time she discovered it, of County Cork in Ireland. She has one of the oddest allergies I've ever heard. She was playing outside with her friends and her eyes were watering, she was itchy, and then her head started to swell. It swelled up so much that it got to the size of like an overinflated football. She ran to the door. She had hives all over. Her mother said she was so swollen she thought she'd been beaten up, and without her clothes and her hair, she wouldn't have recognised her. That was how badly affected she was.
Oh,
took her to the hospital. They applied lots of antihistamines. Weren't entirely sure what had happened. A year later, it happened again. And again, she was cured and looked after. But her mum said they were so distressed because they had no idea what was going on. Mm. She was coming in and checking on her at night just to see if she was still fine. Took her to the Blackrock Clinic in Dublin to Dr. Bruce Mitchell, who was a leading specialist in allergies. And after 3 weeks of testing, he discovered that she is allergic to an interaction between apples and birch tree pollen. So she's fine when she eats an apple, and she's fine when she's near a birch tree during pollen season. But if she eats an apple while she's near a pollinating birch tree, she goes into this allergic reaction.
Oh my god, it's like the explosives in Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yes, yeah. Once they're brought together, catastrophic.
And she only eats this apple once a year.
It was during pollen season, you see, that it had happened. And so she doesn't eat fruit anymore during pollen season, obviously, and she carries adrenaline with her, and she's just very conscious of where she's near birch trees and so on. But isn't that amazing that she's not allergic to either of the things individually?
No.
It's when they're together. And that's such an obscure, like, it's quite a scary thing to think of, is that one combination of things, you might, and you might be very vigilant for all the individual things, but suddenly they'll be together and you won't be aware of it. So yeah, I think just because it's all the things you're allergic to, they all seem like, oh, you're, it's weird that you're allergic to wood, but it's one thing, or it's air, or this, it's light, but what, this one little specific combination?
Yeah, it's like all of the runners on a fruit machine suddenly turn up with the three specific things once in a lifetime.
Yes, yeah.
It's, well, that's almost like a witch's curse of analogy.
Yeah, yes.
When thou eats an apple and the pollen of the birch tree is in season and there is a blood moon in the sky and Tranmere Rovers have won 3-2 away at Newport County.
It's like the writers have wanted to kill this character off for a while and they go, okay, she's got an allergy to apples. No, she's eaten apples in previous series.
Yeah,
okay, she's allergic to birch trees. But she's lived by that birch tree for the entire series. What if we put them together? All right, so this week our candidates for the world's worst allergy are Ben suggests of the public allergic reaction to the allergic reaction in the Peter Rabbit movie. Mr. McGregor's anaphylactic shock after Blackberry assault. Katie's own cross that she has to bear, the allergy to antihistamines. And my suggestion of Grace Morley's toxic mix of birch pollen and apples. I mean, hands down, Katie, it's definitely going to be you, because being allergic to antihistamines is definitely, without doubt, the worst possible allergy.
Well, I just have to, like, hope that I don't get an allergy bad enough.
That you really need
what
them.
What if I'm allergic to apples being pollinated by birch trees and whatever that...
That will be... When we leave today, we're going to give you a poison apple.
Perhaps.
Do you maybe think that's what it was with Snow White? That she was in a birch forest? Actually, the Wicked Queen, not so wicked, just giving her a lovely, tasty apple.
Yeah.
Time to rehabilitate the Wicked Queen, like we've done with Richard III.
She thought it was a nice day out, perfect day for an apple.
Yes. So congratulations, Katie. You have the world's worst allergy. I'd shake you by the hand, but I've been touching this wood. So our world's worst news of the week comes from the Mirror, and massive news in chocolate land, guys. In 2016, you might remember, are you a fan of Equality Street?
Oh yeah,
love Equality Street. They're the strawberry cream. I think they're the best Christmas big box of sweets, actually. I'm quite a big fan of them. In 2016, they said they were going to replace the Toffee Deluxe with the Honeycomb Crunch. I don't know if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big campaign which brought it back after a year. They agreed to bring it back just in time for Christmas. Mm-hmm. So the old Toffee Deluxe came back again in the boring, basically it's the boring brown one.
Mm-mm.
However, big news, because I'm afraid that Nestle have yet again decided they're going to kill the Toffee Deluxe, guys.
Well, they can't play with our emotions like this.
it's ludicrous. Instead, you'll be able to enjoy a new sweet, the Chocolate Caramel Brownie.
Sounds good.
Yeah, right.
What colour is that coming in?
Well, I imagine it's going to be you know, a brown one again, because it's in the chocolate thing. It's got caramel centre.
Rebranding the packaging, spice it up a bit.
Yeah, well, that's true. And also, as one person commented on Instagram, there is no brownie in it. It's a chocolate with a caramel in it. It's calling itself a chocolate caramel brownie, but there's no brownie. It just means the colour is brown. Apparently, the Toffee Deluxe was in the Quality Street mix since it first began in 1936, back when we had blue passports. It'd be a big comment. So apparently, people are fuming for getting rid of it.
Don't fix it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing I do take umbrage with Quality Street is when they're selling the green ones on their own.
Oh, the green triangles.
And they're like, where's the giant strawberry cream?
Yeah, no, that's what you want.
That's what the people need.
They're ones that go straight away.
Yeah.
One person on Twitter said, absolutely fuming with Quality Street for getting rid of Toffee Deluxe. It's my fave one, and the reason I buy a stupid amount of them at Xmas. The new brownie chocolate looks yucky. Thank God for celebrations and heroes. Christmas won't be the same.
Oh.
Quality Street UK replied, hi, Kerry. the Toffee Deluxe has been in and out of the assortment in the past, but there's no plans for it to return this time. A Nestle spokesman told The Sun, well, we know you got your attention last time we dropped the Toffee Deluxe, so we couldn't resist trying it again. bad news for fans of the old Toffee Deluxe. Katie, where can people find out more about you and your work and your shows and all of that?
Probably my website is a good place for that. It's Katie Pritchard, which is K-A-T-I-E P-R-I-T-C-H-A-R-D.co.uk. And I try really hard to keep that up to date. So probably there, or Instagram or Twitter, and it's at Katie Pritchard's with an S at the end. Don't do without an S, because that is a singer-songwriter in Texas, and she does have a great sense of humour, but I think she is a bit annoyed when people tweet her going, "I really enjoyed your song about lettuce." She's like, "I did not sing a song about lettuce."
I think she better write one, though. Meanwhile, we're all off to tie Ben to a large rotating wheel and practice our knife throwing, but instead of knives, we're using kittens. And maybe blackcurrants. Thank you for listening to Worstwood Forward. Goodbye.